comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you're here, and I appreciate that, and I want you to know I do. I'm here because you have a right to know, and because you do matter. We're continuing to get rave reviews on the latest seminar that I did. You know, it's up online now, and it's called Angels, Nephilim, and Anunnaki. We're continuing to get rave reviews on that, and I think, you know, if you haven't seen it, you're missing something. All you have to do is scroll down, go to my website, scroll down, and you'll see the ad for Angels, Nephilim, and Anunnaki, and click that. It'll take you to the page with the information for how to see it. I had the privilege today of being interviewed by Mark Maverick for about 3.5 hours. You know, I'm not often on the other side of the mic, and 3.5 hours on the other side of the mic was interesting, very interesting. We had a good time, and I hope some of you got to hear that. If you were listening to Indy 104, you did get to hear that. Probably said some things that will make people become very opinionated on one side or the other, but I'm used to doing that, and I welcome hearing from folks who heard that interview. Maybe you liked it, maybe you didn't. Either way, please express yourself. It's so important. It really is so important for Americans to start expressing themselves and saying what they think about things. And it doesn't matter. You know, if you didn't like what I said, that's okay. It's a free country, sort of. And you need to act like it's free. And if you did like it, that's okay. It's sort of a free country, and you can act and need to act like it's free. The Alchemy event is coming up November the 11th. 11th, 12th, and 13th. Now, this is probably the most significant event of its type in this decade. Go look at the list of speakers who are going to be there. This is a major, major event in our genre, and you need to be there. I hope you will be there. I'm going to arrive on the 12th. I cannot be there on the 11th because I have to do the show that night. And then the next morning I will fly out, and I will arrive in Los Angeles and at the Alchemy event on the 12th. I'm speaking on the 13th, but on the 12th I'll be out and around in the events and in the lobby. And please just walk right up to me and introduce yourself. I want to meet you. You are the most important people on this planet, and I want to meet important people like you. That's not a joke. That's quite serious. On the 13th, I'll be speaking, and I'll be speaking about defense against the dark arts. Yeah, I know that's kind of Harry Potterish, but I won't be doing Harry Potter things. I am going to be speaking about defense against the dark arts. Please be there. It's called the Alchemy Event. You can click their banner on my website, and it will take you to their website so you can register. We'll be back. I I think I'm back. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We publish each week a newsletter called the K-Files. And if you're not getting it, you need to. And you got to ask yourself, where's the genius in not getting it? Because it's free. There's no reason for you not to be getting it. So be sure you head over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and you'll see right in the middle of your screen, it'll say K-Files. That's what it's called, the K-Files. Click that and subscribe, all right? My guest this evening is Jan Tilley. Jan Tilley is a woman who has engaged in a number of careers, including professional reporter, public information officer, and author, and other things. She's lived a very busy life. She's a wife and a mother and says that is her most important career. Her latest book is called Embody. It is a novel, and it's from a really unique perspective, one I think you're going to enjoy, folks. Jan, welcome to the show. We're delighted to have you.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm very excited to be here.
Jan, I was glad to read in your bio that your family comes first for you. You know, that's becoming really a kind of a rare thing these days, but it is so absolutely important.
I couldn't agree more. I actually started writing after my oldest daughter went off to college, so I had a long period of respite where I just kind of collected the information, knowing that someday I would be able to purge all of this, which I am starting to do now.
So you have two children, right?
Yes, I do.
How old are they?
I have a junior in college and a junior in high school.
A couple of juniors, all right. And yes. You're married to your childhood sweetheart.
Yes, I am. My high school sweetheart for 26 years now. He's a very brave man. There's a fine line, right, between bravery and stupidity. I think he walks that line with me.
Well, you know, I think it's a marvelous thing when families stay together. It's not easy, and it's a great thing when that happens. Okay, tell us a little bit about your book, Embody. Just give us a thumbnail sketch of it, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay. This book actually came about after my first book that I wrote. I started out purging my emotions and my feelings over my oldest daughter going off to college, and I wrote a women's fiction with a little bit of romance in it called Coming About. And in that book, the heroine in the book, the lead character, speaks about how she felt like she didn't fit in the world, like she was from Misfit Island off of the Rudolph show. And that's where everything kind of got started. And, of course, those were my own personal feelings that I had. I wrote them out. And anytime a writer writes something like that, you feel very vulnerable and very naked, kind of expressing your own personal feelings in print like that. I had so many people come up to me afterwards who had read the book and said they could relate to that and they completely understood that and they felt the same way. That kind of got me going on, why do so many of us feel like we don't fit in here on Earth, feel like we don't have a place here, that we're from Misfit Island, that we're just kind of out of place? And that kind of got everything going, and then the inquisitive mind that writers have started going into a little bit more depth on, you know, maybe we feel like we don't fit in here because we really don't.
See, folks, I told you it's a really cool perspective, right? All right.
It's interesting.
Now, this book has to do with what we generally refer to in this genre as walk-ins, where an extraterrestrial, an alien being, walks in to you and sort of takes you over for a bit. It's one thing for you to sort of begin to wonder about, you know, so many people saying, yeah, I'm like that. I feel like I'm from Misfit Island. That's one thing. But to move from that to having this alien walk into somebody and take over, that's quite a leap. What motivated you to run with that plot line?
You know, being an inquisitive mind, I always felt out of place. I think that there are some of us who are showmen and like to be in the spotlight, and then there are so many others that are the observers and the collectors, and we just observe everything so much and take it all in. And why is that? Why, you know, I question that about myself. What am I observing? Why am I collecting all of this data? Is it just to be a writer and just to purge it in different ways? Or am I collecting all of this information to pass it on to someone else, somewhere else, in some other realm? And then I started thinking, what would it be like to be a young alien who's sent here on a mission to try to figure us out? Because we can't figure ourselves out. We don't understand humanity ourselves. It's overwhelming. But to try to be from another planet and come here and understand this would be so overwhelming. And to actually fuse with a human and live in their body with them and try to comprehend things, it just opened a whole new perspective for me. And I really bonded with my little Notlid, as the little alien character in the book, and just to try to imagine what he would go through to step into all of these different personalities and different perspectives on life, it would just be overwhelming. It's overwhelming for me as a human to try to write these experiences, let alone step into them completely vulnerable and not understanding. It would be crazy.
Yeah, you know, when you and I talked on the telephone, I said probably one of the reasons we don't understand humanity and one of the reasons that we all feel pretty much like misfits is because we are. You know,
right.
We have 223 genes that are not from this planet. And so in essence, you know, we are descendants of probably people like your little alien. We are descendants of people from out there somewhere who came here. As wild and bizarre as that may seem, we have 223 genes that simply, flatly, and absolutely have no evolutionary predecessors. They're not from here. And that may be why so many of us, it may be one reason why so many of us feel like we don't fit, because we don't. We're kind of like guests on extended stay here.
Right, absolutely. I wonder if anyone else out there listening ever feels like I do sometimes. You know, a lot of times you'll have a problem or an issue in your life, and you'll go to bed, and for some reason you wake up in the morning, and the solution to it is crystal clear. It almost goes beyond that, where I feel personally like when I go to sleep at night, there is communication with someone, something, somewhere. I don't know. I know we talked about this before. I don't know if that's God or spirit guides or if it's actually aliens somehow coming while I sleep to collect all of this information that I'm gathering. I mean, I started questioning myself. Maybe I am an alien. I had several people actually come up to me and say, you know, I kind of think that I may have issues with that as well. So I don't think we're alone out there. And the more we question, the more people we talk to about it, we just kind of bring it full circle where we don't feel so alone and isolated with what we think to ourselves are crazy thoughts.
Well, I stopped having problems with being human. And this is going to sound far out. This is going to sound probably a little bit insane to some people. But I stopped having issues with, you know, trying to be a human and feeling like I don't fit in here and fit in there when I started realizing I don't feel like I fit as a human because I'm not. And none of us are. You know, once I started recognizing that we are, at least in part, from out there, that started making sense to me then, why there seems to be this connection that so many people have to out there. And you just described it. That's what made me think of it. You go to sleep, and some kind of communication is taking place. And with who, with what, we don't know, but it's from out there. And that's why. I'm absolutely sure of that. That's why that happens, is because we are at least in part from out there, and we're at least in part, in tune with that. And I think it's either, you know, when we don't know that, or if we know it but we deny it, then we're compartmentalizing ourselves and consigning ourselves to Misfit Island.
Absolutely.
And, you know, when we kind of understand, well, you know, there is part of me from out there, I'm related to that, whatever it is, so now I'm not a misfit. I understand how I fit here. And, you know, you're in tune. I'm glad you brought this up, because you're in tune with the fact that something sort of bigger and greater than us is communicating with you and providing you with answers to things that you had no answer to.
Right.
I'm glad you brought that up. Lots and lots of people need to realize that about themselves.
And I am just tapping into this. This is such a new venue for me to open myself up to the possibilities that this is real, that there's something else going on out there. You know, I've lived my whole life as the little housewife. I work at the elementary school. I raise my children. And now I'm thinking, there's really something more going on here. And you're right. At first, I kind of, you know, felt crazy. And the more people that I talked to hundreds of people. Do you believe in aliens? I only had one person out of the hundreds of people I talked to that said, no, they do not believe in aliens. When you would ask people, do you believe aliens are here with us? They were a little bit more hesitant. Mm-hmm. I've never seen one, they would say. If I don't see it, I can't believe it. But in my book, I believe that aliens, or in the book anyways, I say that the aliens will come in a spirit, more of a spirit form or an energy form, because they have to transport back and forth through these different planes, and they can't live in the human flesh like we'd have. So they will come in the spirit form, where we don't even notice. We don't notice the spirit inside ourselves. We don't acknowledge the soul inside each other. So how do we acknowledge if there's an alien soul or a spirit right next to you right now? You know, I talk about the goosebumps on your flesh, or your hair on the back of your neck bristling. You know, that's your body trying to signify to yourself that there's an energy source there. There's something else going on. But as humans, usually we're oblivious to things that are probably around us all the time, and we don't even realize it.
I agree entirely with what you just said. You know, we really are oblivious to lots and lots of things that are going on all around us, and we never even notice it. We're totally oblivious to it. And I've used this example, Jan, a number of times. You know, wherever you are right now, folks, doesn't matter where you are on this planet, wherever you are right now, I can guarantee you, your eyes cannot see infrared light. And your eyes cannot see ultraviolet light. And yet, it is absolutely certain that all around you there is infrared and ultraviolet. Now, those are physical examples of what we're talking about. Those are just physical examples. But that's absolute proof that what Jan just said is true, that things are going on all around us and we're not even aware of it. Jan, have you ever heard of Dr. Gerald Epling?
No.
Well, I had never heard of him either, and I don't know how, but somehow, I think through this show even, maybe he sent me an email, somehow I got in touch with him, and he has wound up being guest on this show a number of times. Dr. Epling is a research scientist. He is in the Dallas, Texas area. And he is a research scientist on memory. Listen to this. Now, this blew my mind. He said, you know, we know just about everything there is to know about memory. We know how memories are formed. What are the best methods to make sure that you remember something, you know, how to form that memory quicker and stronger. He said, we've done lots of research on memory. And we know a lot about memory, except where it's stored. He said, memories are not stored in your brain. Does that blow your mind? Yeah, memories are not stored in the brain. The brain, according to him, now this is my characterization of it, but the brain acts like the CPU in your computer. So where's the hard drive that has the memories stored? The brain acts like the CPU and accesses the memories, but from where?
That's an excellent question.
Yeah, well, you know, I threw out the idea that, you know, there is a measurable energy field around all of us. It's measurable, scientifically measurable. Maybe that energy field around us is the hard drive where it's stored, where the memories are stored. And if that or something like that is the case, it makes it easy to understand how when you go to sleep, those could be sort of interacting with the energy fields of everybody else in the world and with perhaps the cosmos itself. And that's where you get these answers from.
That would make perfect sense. Now, I have another question for you and your listeners.
Okay.
I have experienced several times in my life, I will wake up in the middle of the night, and there is something descending from the ceiling. I know that sounds crazy. I have never never brought this up. It is in my book. But the only way I can describe it, it looks like a green glowing hairball. Mm-hmm. And it's descending down from the ceiling. When I will wake up and focus on it, it will ascend back up into the ceiling and disappear. Now, one time, my husband actually woke up and saw it as well. Only one time. Mm-hmm. But there have been several times throughout my life where I've seen this, like an orb or something, descending down. And I'm wondering, is that some kind of a something coming to gather information or communicate with me? Has anyone else ever spoken of anything like that?
Yes. Yes. All the time. And believe me, you're not crazy.
It sounds crazy to a housewife from Indiana. It makes me feel crazy.
Yeah, but you're not. This similar things are happening to people all over this planet. And there are people that actually have gotten pictures of, we call them orbs. And there are people that have gotten pictures of them. Hey, we have to step away for a break. And so just hang in there and we'll be back in just a moment.
The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on earth.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jan Tilley. She is the author of a book called Embody, and that's what we're talking about. And really, we're talking about all of the stuff that kind of goes into the making of this book, not just about the book itself. Now, when we went away for break, Jan, I was telling you that you had told us about this glowing kind of green, I think you said hairball.
That's the only way I could describe it. It almost looked like it had, it wasn't a complete, like, I've seen pictures of orbs mm-hmm. where they're completely round circles, encompassed almost, it looks like in a bubble. This did not have that shape. It was more spread out and almost looked like it had some kind of filaments inside of it, like a big loosely, like a yarn ball maybe, or a hairball, just something really loose, but it was glowing green.
Yeah, well, you know, when we say orbs, we're sort of lumping a lot of stuff together there. Some orbs are, as you described, they're completely round, look like a bubble.
Right.
But not all. I've seen them that look like mushrooms. I've seen them that look like, well, in shapes that are sort of indescribable, but they're glowing. But yeah, that's happening to people all around the world. It's not something that gets reported in the news, except on great shows like this one. It's happening, and there are people getting pictures of it. I have had people tell me what they think they are.
I would love to hear that.
Well, you know, maybe when we open the phone lines, some of the folks who have seen orbs will call in and talk with you about what they think they are.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. Now, I've heard people say it's angels. I don't think so. I've heard people say it's aliens. Well, maybe. But we don't know for sure. Let me change that. I don't know for sure what they are, but I am sure it's happening to people all around the world. And it's something we didn't hear about in the early days of UFOs, when, you know, everybody was focused on UFOs. But you know what? They match the description of what the, in World War II, our pilots reported what they called Foo Fighters, and some of them were these orbs. And they would just come up and fly alongside the planes, you know, and then fly off. And so I don't know what they are, but they are interesting. Did you feel threatened by it?
I felt uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I did feel like it was coming down to me. I wasn't afraid by it, and I went back to sleep very easily afterwards. It didn't keep me up at night, mm-hmm. but it did feel very strange. There was a strange energy to it that made me feel very uncomfortable, and I would lay in bed and watch it ascend back up very slowly. It didn't move fast at all. It would go very slowly back up and just dissolve right into the ceiling and disappear.
Now, you said your husband woke up and saw it one time.
Yes.
What did he think about it?
He thought it was very strange as well. Actually, in the book, when I refer to these green glow, the green glowing object will come down on the human while the human is asleep, and that is how the little alien Notlid, the young alien, that is what fuses Notlid's energy to the human's energy, or fuses their souls together, so that he can be one with them and feel their feelings and their experiences. And when I refer to this green glowing object that fuses them together, I actually named it in the book, I named it Nevek, which is Kevin, actually, backwards, which is my husband's name. So
your
I
husband,
gave him little props there, because
yeah.
He is the only other one that I have ever known of that has ever actually seen this thing to validate that I am not crazy, that I don't feel. I even tried to search it online, to Google it, and I couldn't. You just can't find anything out there. I mm-hmm. can't find viable information as to what this is, and it kind of makes you feel a little alone and isolated out in the world.
Well, first a statement and then an observation. The observation is a question. The statement, your husband has a great name. Boy, I like that. I'm impressed.
It is perfect.
Yeah, it's an impressive name. I wish I had that name. the observation and the question, the observation is a question. In your book, you have said this little green glowing ball that comes down is the alien coming in while people are asleep and infusing himself into the person.
Right.
What if that's exactly what happens to you?
That's a scary thought, because it very well could be. And when, in the book, I really believe that when I write, something happens, and I never expected this. The characters not only come alive, but they help me write the book. As crazy as that sounds, I've talked to so many other writers that say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when I opened myself up to this thought and gave in to this project, something came in and just gave me information and insights and thoughts that didn't come from me. All of these concepts, I mean, I had a basic overview of how I wanted it to go, but I would wake up in the morning with insights and visions that I would have never thought up on my own, and I don't believe that they came from me. They came through me from somewhere else, but all of my writing does. But there was something else out there. I don't know if there's aliens infused in me, but I would not rule it out. I feel like I'm observing and I'm collecting information, and I feel, I don't know if it's just your soul collecting information to, you know, pass you on to a higher karmic stage when you die. That's what I always thought it was. But now I'm starting to think that there may be actually more to it, and we're transferring this information to a different source.
Well, why would it be frightening to you if that's what's happening?
I'm a little housewife in Indiana that has never, you know, you have your religion and you have your job and you have your life and everything's in these neat little boxes, and then all of a sudden the top is blown off and nothing makes sense and nothing is as it seems, and it can be a little overwhelming. It can be kind of frightening to think there are, I believe that there are these little alien energies all around. I personally don't feel that they're here to harm us. I feel that they're here to observe and learn from us. They're technologically so much more advanced than we are. But the feelings and emotions, those are the things that they don't understand because they don't have the flesh and the heart that we have. So I feel like they come here and fuse with us to try to understand that, and for a greater purpose. As I speak about in the book, there's a whole different realm as to why I think that they are doing this. I don't want to give away the end of the book because it's a big spoiler alert. It's a very twisted ending, but I feel that there are times when these alien energies, these beings, can actually take over a body and claim it for their own. And I believe that they're here doing that right now, and actually, I don't know if they're going to take over the world, take back over the world, which is an interesting concept. Maybe they had it before we did. What are the thoughts on that?
Maybe the ones that are coming here and doing this are being sent on an inspection tour by those who are our parents.
That's a great idea.
You know, even after I got too old to have a babysitter, my parents, if they went out for the evening, would still have someone drop by and check on us.
Right.
And maybe that's what's going on. Maybe they're just having somebody drop by and check on us and see how the kid's doing.
And in the book, I refer to exactly what you're talking about, too. There are the mentors. Our little Notlet in the book, our little young alien, has mentors that look over him, watch over him, and make sure that things are going as planned. And not until the end of the book do they actually tell him what his ulterior mission is here, his ultimate mission, but they give him little ideas along the way and try to help him understand how overwhelming the fleshlings, in the book, humans are called fleshlings.
Mm-hmm.
So he tries to help him understand that, but he's very much his mentor, very much not a superior being, but a wise being, somebody who has already been here before and understands what Notlet is going through and tries to help him on his journey.
All right, I'm going to go in a direction that you'll probably wonder at first, what in the world is this guy doing? But go with me on this.
Okay.
Do you have a car?
Yes.
Do you drive?
Yes.
Is this the only car you've ever had, or have you had other cars?
I've had others.
And when this one wears out, what will you do with it?
Buy another one.
Yeah, you'll get rid of this one and buy another
one.
Okay, now your car, regardless of what kind of car it is a powerful machine. It can take you down the road at a lot faster speed than you can go on your feet. And it'll go anywhere you tell it to go, anywhere you direct it. But when it wears out, you don't just stay home and say, well, that's it, I can't go anywhere anymore, it's over. You get another car, right?
Right.
I think that's exactly what's going on with us and our bodies. The body, I think, is just like a car. You drive it till it wears out, and then you move out and you get you another car. The body goes anywhere you tell it to go. It does whatever you tell it to do, and when it wears out, it's not over. I think you move on. And because of that, I could see if that concept. Now that's how I view it. Okay, that's just my opinion.
Right.
But if that concept is right, then that means we moved into these bodies. And if we can, why couldn't someone else?
Right. So when we leave these bodies with all of this knowledge that we've gained in the human form, where do we take that knowledge to when we move on to the next stage?
I don't know. Maybe we become Nautilus somewhere else. See what I mean?
Well, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah. I mean, who really knows, you know, after we, quote, die, after the body dies, who really knows where do we go and what do we do? I've read a lot of fiction, both religious and non-religious, about what you do and where you go. But it's not over when the body is finished. And that leads me to think it didn't begin when the body did.
Right, but then that opens up, is that just reincarnation of the human soul, or is there something extraterrestrial linked to it?
Well, you're not supposed to ask me hard questions like that.
That is a burning question, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we are extraterrestrial, and we're camped here. Okay? We don't fit with any of the other animal life here. In fact, we're destructive of all other animal life here. So we don't fit. And we have 223 genes that didn't come from here. Where did we originally come from? I don't know. But I do know that science has now told us it wasn't here. Okay, so I don't know where we came from. I just know where we didn't come from. And that was, we didn't evolve here. All right, we have to step away for a break. And I'll pick up with that very controversial thought when we come back. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Jan Tilley. She is the author of a book called Embody. And we're talking about the things, the topics, the concepts that swirl about in the background of the book. So we were talking about, does that mean that's reincarnation based on what I said? You know, I think reincarnation can and does happen, but I don't think it's inevitable. I think there is a time at which you graduate, you move on. And, I think this is kindergarten. You got to learn some stuff and get it right. And unlike our schools today, you don't get an automatic pass. So you got to move on at some point. But where do we move on to? Now, I've had this discussion, Jen. I'm not a religious guy. But I've had this discussion with a number of Christians, and I'm not by any means antagonistic towards Christianity, or Judaism or any other religion. But I've had this conversation, and the answer they tell me is, well, if you're absent from the body, you're present with the Lord. Okay. And if their theology is correct, God is omnipresent, meaning he's everywhere. So if I'm absent from the body and I'm present with the Lord, that means I could be anywhere.
And what is the Lord?
Yeah, well, of course, they're talking about, when you have that conversation with Christians, they're talking about Jesus. But they say he is God, and their theology says God is omnipresent. He's everywhere. Okay, well, if that's the case, then I'm present with the Lord now. And to be absent from the body, and to be present with the Lord would simply mean nothing really significant happened here. I'm still alive and everything's okay, even though the body died. I mean, that's the way I understand it. So I don't know.
That makes sense.
Well, from certain perspectives, it does. But I mean, there are people that would argue from other perspectives, and I respect that. But that's how I see it. What if our universe, the whole universe, it's gigantic, it's big. We can't even imagine how big this thing is. And what if it's only one bubble in a whole pile of bubbles like soap bubbles?
And you know it has to be.
You would think.
They have to be. It has to be out there.
Yeah. And so maybe when you graduate, you get to move to the next universe. Maybe that's the next grade. I mean, I don't know. But I think that whatever... I'll tell you something else that I have quoted to Christian people when they've talked to me about this. In their Bible, it says, "Now we see through a glass darkly. It does not yet appear what we shall be. But we know when we see him," talking about Jesus, "we will be like him." So whatever he's like, that's we're graduating to that. Well, you know, metaphysically, that's certainly, there's nothing at all objectionable about that metaphysically. Because right there in the Bible it says, you know, we don't really know what's coming here. We kind of see through a glass, but darkly, just barely. But whatever it is that he graduated to, we graduate to. So metaphysically, that's kind of what I'm describing.
Right. And we have just started to scratch the surface on this. I like to think that we're sheltered. As humans, we are sheltered. We are oblivious. A lot of times we are ignorant. We don't see past the hand in front of our face. We are so fixated on the flesh that we don't see anything beyond that. It's so hard for us to see the energy, the soul, anything beyond what is right there in front of our face, which is great for such as in my book, Notlid, for the other aliens. It's perfect because we don't even know that they're here. We are completely, completely oblivious.
Yeah, it's kind of like ants in an anthill, and you can stand right over their anthill and watch them, and they are totally oblivious to the fact that you're there. You know, and there you are and there they are, but they don't even notice you.
Right.
How old were you the first time you saw this green, I'll call it an orb, but we understand it's something a little different. But the first time you saw this green orb, how old were you?
The first time I remember it, I was about 25.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. We lived at that time, we lived in a house that had a lot of paranormal activity going on. And currently now we live in a house that many people, I have never seen a ghost myself, but many people have seen a ghost in this house that we live in now as well. I've also seen this orb in this house. Does it have something to do with, is the paranormal activity linked to extraterrestrial activity, or do they feed off of each other, or is it the same thing?
Yes.
Yes.
I think a lot of, not all, but a lot of activity that we call paranormal, or that we say that's a ghost, really could be extraterrestrial. And, you know, I just did a seminar called Angels, Nephilim, and Anunnaki. Now, in this seminar, I explain that these extraterrestrials that are the races of extraterrestrials that are named in the Bible, some people think they're not. They are. They exist, they are named, and they look fearsome. There's a story in the Bible where they are invisible to the humans, but they're present. And there's a guy going into battle, and there's a prophet walking alongside of him, talking to him, and the guy says, "Man, you know, there's so many more of the enemy than there is of our troops. We're going to be slaughtered. This is just going to be awful." And this prophet prays for him, and he says, "Lord, lift the veil from his eyes that he can see." And according to the Bible, the veil, whatever that means, the fog in his mind, I guess, lifted, and on all the hillsides around, he could see these religious people say angelic beings, but that isn't the language that's used. It says the hosts of the Lord. Okay, so they were there and ready to fight, but he couldn't see them. All right, so there you have extraterrestrials. They're not from here, so that makes them extraterrestrial. And they're invisible to our eyes. Obviously not invisible to each other, but invisible to our eyes. So I think a lot of times things that get classified as being ghosts or being paranormal activity could be extraterrestrials doing things that, you know, we can't see them. We can see the result of what they do. And sometimes someone gets a glimpse of one, and then it vanishes again. Well, that's what you had with this guy in the Bible. Okay? So I don't find that to be really odd or strange. I mean, we have ancient records of that sort of thing happening, and that's one of them, you know, right there in the Bible. And I look at the Bible, you know, it's a collection of ancient records of a period of time with a people for whom we don't have any other records. That's why it's important. All right, we'll be back right after this break, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Jan Tilley. Those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted you are here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away for that first hour. Man, have we been having fun. We've been talking about some deep, deep stuff that swirls about in the background of Jan Tilley's book called Embody. And I'll tell you what, it's one of the deepest conversations we've had in a while. But thank you very, very much. I'm going to open up the telephone lines and invite our audience to participate in tonight's show. And the way we do that, ladies and gentlemen, is we have a magic combination for you to dial into your Stargate, commonly known as a telephone. Here's the combination. These are the coordinates. 623-444 623-444-5889. Once again, 623-444-5889. Dial those coordinates into your Stargate, and it will transport you here to the studio, and you can talk with Jan Tilley. So let's go to the telephone and call her. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Jerome.
Hi. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Jerome.
What part of Indiana are you from?
I'm from Park County. Right now we're having the Covered Bridge Festival. We're in the Covered Bridge capital of the world.
Is that anywhere near Bloomington?
Not too far, yes. My oldest daughter actually goes to college in Bloomington.
Is that right? My daughter did her graduate work in Bloomington, and it's a very nice area.
It's a wonderful town. I love Bloomington.
Yeah, it's a very nice area. I always enjoyed it. Are you a listener to the Kevin Smith Show?
Yes, I'm new to all of this, so I try to catch. I have to do the internet and pull up shows that way, but I'm learning as I go. It's all new to me.
Well, he's on every evening, and I would suggest you listen in on it. It's very interesting. Kevin has an e-book, Gods in the Garden, and I read that book, and basically, if I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I'm thinking that he's thinking that Adam is extraterrestrial, not exactly terrestrial. That he was not the first human. There was what's called the humans that was wiped out, and then Adam was created. And he talks about these 123 genes. Kevin, I tried to do some research on that 223 genes. I couldn't really come up with anything. How did you come up with that?
Well, I'll tell you what. It was in Science Magazine, but it's hard to find now. It disappeared real quickly as soon as Zechariah Sitchin picked up on it, and he started talking about it. It started disappearing from off the internet, but it was in an article written for Science Magazine.
Okay, like I said, I tried to do some research on that, and I never could find it.
Yeah.
Jan, about these orbs, it doesn't really sound like an orb, and I know Kevin said the same thing. I've seen pictures of these orbs, but boy, this doesn't, I don't know, I've never experienced what you've experienced, but obviously your husband did also, and that's very interesting.
Do you have any idea what it might possibly be? Any theory?
You know what? I live in a house that my grandparents used to live in. It's been in the family, and I have a dog sitting in the living room, and my dog will glance up, and he's looking at something up in the corner behind us. And my wife and I always considered it to be family spirits. The house is not haunted. It's not malevolent. But it seems like, you know, there's something there, and it's over us. I don't know if this is a similar situation, or you know what I'm saying?
Right. It very well could be. It could be just a paranormal experience that I'm having, but it is a very strange occurrence, and it's just right over top of me in the bed, descending down towards me very slowly at a snail's pace, and it's very strange. And then it just, when I can tell it stops descending down upon me when I wake up and see it. It literally comes to a grinding halt and then slowly ascends back up into the ceiling. Not quickly, not in any hurry, not ashamed of itself or embarrassed that it's there. Just ascends right back up like it has a path.
Well, it doesn't seem to be malevolent, that's for sure. And Kevin, you go ahead.
No, that's fine. I was just going to say, I don't feel that way. It doesn't make me feel, you know, my heart doesn't race, my hair doesn't bristle. I don't feel threatened by it. But it's just unsettling to wonder what is it doing to me as I sleep. It makes me nervous.
Kevin, you mentioned about the memories not being in our brain.
Well, that's that is what Dr. Epling says, yeah.
That, you know, it seems like when you're remembering stuff, it seems like it's centered right in between your ears.
But, yeah. Go back in the archives and find all the shows we've done with Dr. Gerald Epling, and you'll hear that discussion. He says that the brain works like your computer's CPU. It goes out and accesses the memories and brings them to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
But the memories are not stored in the brain. And he said, so where's the hard drive?
Consciousness.
Yeah, so where's the hard drive? Where are they being stored?
I wonder if they're being stored in what, like Edgar Cayce would call a universal consciousness, or what these remote viewers seem to access.
Oh, it very well could be. I don't know, but I do firmly think that consciousness is very, very real. It's not imaginary. And, I mean, even quantum entanglement seems to indicate there is consciousness. And so, you know, maybe our memories are being stored, as you say, in the universal consciousness. I don't know.
Jan, thank you for being a guest, and I appreciated listening to you. And thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the call.
Thanks for calling in.
All right, telephone number is 623-444-5889. Wherever you happen to be on this planet, and probably a few other planets, you can call that number and get to the studio. If you're not in the United States and you're not in Canada, you can send me a flash message. Now, you do that by going to my website, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show. You'll see Jan's picture. Right above the picture about tonight's show is the link for sending me a flash message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
My name is Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hello, I'm calling from Ohio.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi. I've so enjoyed listening to your conversation tonight, and I'm just wondering where I can find a copy of your book.
Oh, thank you for asking. It's actually at Amazon.com, and you can get it in book or Kindle format, depending on your preference, and it's Embody with an E, like the aliens are embodying you. So, yes, it's at Amazon. Help yourself. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay, Michelle, thanks for calling. 623-444-5889. Or you can send me a flash message, okay? Use those magic coordinates. Put them into your Stargate. Some of you call them iPhones. Some of you call them Androids and other things. But use that combination, and it will lock in on our location and transport you here. Isn't that magical? Jan, you were about 25 years old the first time you remember seeing one of these, and you said you were living in a house at the time that had a lot of paranormal activity. I don't want to really get into a lot of this yet, because we do have a caller on hold, but did you at the time associate it with something paranormal?
I thought it probably had something to do with paranormal. I never in my wildest dreams thought that it had something to do with extraterrestrial. That never entered. That was not even on my radar at that stage until very recently, when I really started delving internally and analyzing all of this. But I did feel like it was something, some kind of an energy source trying to communicate with me. Mm-hmm. At that time, the only answer that I had for that was paranormal, that it was some kind of a ghost or something. But I did feel like it was coming down to connect with me and communicate with me in some way.
All right. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Randy from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Randy.
Hi, Randy.
How are you doing?
I am doing well.
You guys are blowing my mind. I turned on the show just as you were talking about this orb thing.
Have you ever seen it?
I've lived in the same house for 11 years. This house doesn't have any activity. It doesn't have any history. It's not haunted or anything. I always didn't think so. And then about a week ago, I saw an orb in my bedroom. And when I say I saw an orb, I'm not talking about taking a digital photograph and looking at the results. I saw an orb real time with my own two eyes appear in the middle of the room, float across the room, and then disappear.
How big was it?
I'd say about the size of a pack of cigarettes.
And what color was it?
It was like a dull white or a grayish white or a silver white.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And when it happened, I'm open-minded to paranormal stuff, but I'm also a healthy skeptic. So mm-hmm. when it happened, I was like, well, I don't know what the heck that was. And then the next day, I saw another one in the same room but in a different part of the room. Same kind of a phenomena. This self-illuminating light source appeared and floated across the room and then disappeared. And I thought, well, that was pretty weird. And then nothing happened for about a week, and then I saw one again last night. So I'm not sure what to make of all this, but it is you're the first two people I've ever told. And it was just ironic that when I turned on the show, you were talking about orbs.
Were you asleep at the time? Did you wake up and see it?
No.
Or were you awake?
No, I was wide awake. It was in the evening. The room wasn't completely dark, but it was dimly lit.
Were you afraid of it? Did you have any feelings towards it at all?
No, I'm just puzzled. That's my biggest feeling, is I'm not afraid of it. I mean, I didn't get the impression that it was trying to interact with me. It was just kind of here, and at the same time that I was here.
Was it just observing you, possibly?
I don't know.
That's strange. Well, you're the first other person I've ever spoken to that has seen it at night like that, too. So I'm very grateful to know that there are other people out there that see things like that. It makes me feel not so all alone and isolated.
Yeah,
here.
I'm still trying to debunk it. I'm trying to think maybe it was car headlights or something like that. But the street I'm on, the traffic runs perpendicular to the house, and unless a car made a U-turn out in the street, the headlights wouldn't hit my room, you know.
Well, Randy, let me throw something at you. I used to live on an island called Timor, and you may be old enough to remember a movie, or you've heard of a movie called Mutiny on the Bounty.
There were two of them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're familiar with it then. That's not a fictional story that about Captain Bligh and all that. That's true. And the island that Bligh and his faithful men in a lifeboat finally floated ashore on an island and sort of were rescued because there was a Dutch trading post there. That island was Timor. And I have lived there. I lived there for 2 years. And during monsoon season, I lived in the jungle, and during monsoon season, every animal in the jungle tries to get out of the rain. And so they will try to get in your house. And I came home one time and was going to get my suitcase and pack because I was going home to Thailand. That's where my family is, my wife and my son and my house, my car, my dog. It's in Thailand. So I was going home to Thailand for a week. I picked up the suitcase, and there was a cobra behind the suitcase. Now, I can either believe it's a cobra and deal with it as a cobra, or debunk it and die. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a bit more threatening and potentially dangerous situation than what I described.
Yeah, but my point is, it may be exactly what it appears to be. We may not know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we may not know what that is, but it may be exactly what it appears to be, and there may not be some other so-called natural cause for it. It may actually just be what it is.
Right. I just underscoring that the skeptic in me wants to disprove it, you know.
Yeah. Well, and that's normal. That's normal. But you didn't feel threatened by it. Let me tell you, I know a guy, and he's been a guest on this show, and I know him personally, who got hit in the head by one of these things. He was scared of it at first, but it came right through his car window and hit him right in the side of the head and went right into his head and came right out the other side of his head and went out the window on the other side. And I said, well, what did it feel like? He said it was the most amazing thing you can imagine. He said, if you can just imagine feeling warm and fuzzy all over instantly.
It sounds better than bourbon.
So, you know, I have not had that experience, so all I can do is recount what I have heard.
The impression I got, and I can't tell you why I think this, it just came to me that these are things that are like passing in and out of our reality and going back to some other reality.
Mm-hmm. Very well could be, yeah.
Absolutely, that's what I think too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the whole UFO paranormal thing, I think, like you said, I think they're linked, and we might be talking about, you know, interdimensionality.
Very well could be. Very well.
Where do they go back to is the question.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and how and why do they get into this dimension? But, I mean, I'm glad they do. It's better than Christmas lights, you know?
And what are they doing while they're here? Are they just observing? Are they collecting information? Are they taking pieces of us back with them? What are they doing?
I don't know.
That's the question.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you both.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Randy.
All right.
Good question. What are they doing? And you said, are they collecting information? You know, our DNA, there are scientists, renowned scientists, who have said that our DNA is just like a computer code. And others have said it's like a language. It even has syntax. So what if we've been storing up information for all these years in our DNA, and they're just coming in and downloading it?
That would be very easy to do.
I would think, for them.
How is that so far-fetched? Why do people not believe that? It would be very, very plausible.
Yeah, it would be. I know that we have other listeners who have had interaction with orbs because we've had them on the show. And I hope that if you've had some kind of interaction with orbs, whether they look like a bubble or they look like something else, you've had some kind of interaction with them, I hope you'll give us a call and talk to us about it. We would like to have your input on this. 623-444-5889. Jen, I know of a couple of cases in Australia, because these people have both called the show and then sent me flash messages about these experiences as well. And so I know that it's not just in the United States. It happens, what we're talking about happens around the world. All right, let's see about this call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, this is Leah from Tennessee.
Hello, Leah.
Hey.
Hi, Leah.
Hey, I wouldn't know where to start. Now, several aspects of what she's talking about is like getting downloaded with information, waking up with an answer.
Mm-hmm.
That's been happening to me since I was a little kid.
Uh-huh.
Even stupid, trivial stuff, even like trying to make a doll and trying to figure out how to make the eyes, things. I make my own patterns, waking up with the answer.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like you, do you work that out yourself while you sleep, or do you feel like you get those answers from somewhere else?
That's a good question, but a lot of times with certain answers, they didn't come from me unless there's something deep in subconscious from a memory from a past life or something. But I know as far as I've dealt with orbs, whether they orbs that look like ships and the size of ships, right down to the little orbs in the cameras and stuff like that. And, well, I had asked Kevin the question a while back because hearing different voices and all these different things that happened, what did he think it was, what linked them all? And I thought he had a perfect answer. And it's consciousness. Whether it be our consciousness, could it be our higher consciousness, our own higher consciousness, but connected to other consciousness. So that would mean the ETs, the angels, the your own higher conscious would all be connected into that. So it could be, the answer would be all of them.
That's a good idea. That makes sense. Now, is that what some people would perceive as God, the all-knowing, omnipresent being? Is that all of that encompassed into one? Is that, and then is that little particles of the all-knowing God? Are these little orbs?
I would think they're a consciousness in itself. Maybe that's what our own consciousness looks like without the body. But, yeah, I would say they are. I would say just like any molecule is a part of your own body, each cell looks like an orb if you got it right down to the smallest point. So if you take it, the whole universe, the galaxy, all of it put together would be all connected in the same way. The whole all embodying would be the Christ consciousness or whatever you want to call it.
Now let me throw something into the mix here, ladies. I don't know that Genesis is true, but if it is true, then we are descendants of two people, Adam and Eve, right? If Genesis
right.
is true.
Right.
Meaning then our conscious, all of us are related. If we're descendants of Adam and Eve, everybody on the planet is related, and our consciousness is entangled with everybody here.
Yep, which makes us all connected.
Yeah, and for those who are open to that and allow it to just be and don't fight against it, that may be where we're getting information we didn't know we have.
Yeah, you talked, Kevin, about lifting that veil.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that? Lift the veil so we can see clearly. Are there tricks that we can do or things we can practice to see that clearly?
That's an excellent question, and a break just took over. So hang on to that. Leo, you want to hang on?
Yes, I would.
All right. Both of you hang on. We'll be back right after this.
Okay.
Listening to the Kevin Smith Show, and on the line with me, my guest, Jan Tilley, and Leah from Tennessee. Now, when we went to break, Jan, you ask a heavy question. You want to ask it again?
Yes. I was wondering if you spoke about the veil being lifted so we could see clearly and see energies, entities, angels, extraterrestrials, whatever you deem them to be, that are right next to us that we're sheltered from or mm-hmm. blinded to somehow. And I was wondering if there's a way that we can practice that or exercises we can do to try to help lift that veil so we can see them clearly.
Yeah, and I'm going to suggest something. And so if both of you ladies and everybody in the audience will do this, with me. It's not silly. Try it. I want you to just put your hand, either hand, right in front of your face. All right. Now, let's suppose that you were raised believing that this is exactly what you must do to be normal and in our society. You must walk around with your hand in front of your face. It would be pretty difficult to navigate things, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Okay. So what if one day you realized, you know what, it may be usual that that's what people in our society are doing, but that's not normal. Just because it's usual doesn't mean it's normal. I'm going to take my hand down. So you take your hand down, and all of a sudden there's a whole big world and a brand new vista that appears to you. Now let's suppose that you were raised to believe you are human. Pretty good bet. Pretty good bet. I bet you were raised to believe you're human. But
yes.
What if you're not? And what if you just relax and forget about trying to be the best human you can be and just be you? I'm not concerned about whether that's human or not. I'm just me. And what I am is an extension of the consciousness. Now, if we do that and we just relax with it, then consciousness becomes like a lake where the water is smooth as glass. And a boat, that's you, is going across the water. It leaves a wake behind it because it's pushing water out of the way in front of it. But if all of the water in front of that boat were to move out of the way before the boat gets there, it would sink. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It only moves as it needs to. It only moves out of the way as it needs to. And so consciousness reveals to us only what we need to have revealed at the time we need it. But if we walk around with our hand in front of our face, we never get to see it. So by installing this mask in front of us that says, I am this, then we go through life trying to be this, whatever that is, instead of removing the mask and just be what we are. Does that make sense?
The more we believe and the more we open ourselves up to the possibilities, the more will be revealed to us?
No, the more we relax. I don't believe anything. And that's shocking to some people. But I say, I know or I don't know. And I'm comfortable with I don't know. I don't believe is what people fill in the blanks with because they don't want to say I don't know. So if we stop filling in the blanks with believe and just say, well, I don't know, you know, and that's okay with me. If I'm supposed to know, I will know. And our boat keeps moving through the water, and water moves out of the way as it needs to. Consciousness reveals to us what we need as we need it. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I'm just not that patient. It's not one of my virtues. I want to know. I want to see it. I want to understand it all, which I know we won't until we leave this earth, and that will probably just open up even more questions.
It's more you'll see it when you're ready to.
Yeah, and because, it's as you relax, it happens.
Yeah, if you let go of the doubt so much and just go with it, instead of questioning your sanity, which I know is really hard to do, just
yes,
be open to it. Yeah, to stop questioning it and just be open to it.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, always doubting yourself.
On this show, I often drop little Kevinisms. People ask me what religion I am. I'm a Kevinist. Okay? So here is a Kevinism. Whatever is, and that's all that is. And so you just relax to the realization that whatever is just is. And I'm not required to understand it all. I'm just going to relax and enjoy it, whatever it is.
It's confusing, that's for sure.
I wanted to make a statement about something like you talked about the orb coming down and wondering whether it's there to help you or hurt you or whatever.
Yes.
I think any consciousness is always got some naughty to them sometimes, sense of strange sense of humor sometimes when they play with you. But on the other hand, too, had experiences where they would come when you need them the most, if you let them. It's like when you say a prayer for help, that's when you'll get help. You know, ask and use to find, all that kind of stuff. But I've had it to where there's points, which Kevin could understand some of the stuff I've been through, where I didn't think I could handle it anymore and ask for help. And I kind of would akin it to a walk-in, where they come and kind of just kind of take over me, help me do the mundane, have to get through every day. I still had kids to take care of, still had a job to go to, that I could actually, my soul, I guess you could say, could just go ahead and fall apart while something else could take over and go on and get through the day.
That's beautiful. So you think that they're here to help and assist us, more than actually extract information and learn from us?
I think it would be all the above. I'm sure they're learning as well as we are. But also they're just like we would be there for a friend. Or like Kevin would be for your own children or your parents.
Or like a doctor.
Animals, you know, even animals that go get hurt on the street or whatever or get lost, we're there for them.
Well, I view them sort of like a doctor.
It's a mutual thing.
I view them sort of like a doctor. He's there to help you, but as he helps you and as he helps other people, he's learning things he didn't know.
Exactly.
So that's
we're
sort of how
off I of do. Each other.
Mm-hmm. Leah, thank
well,
you for the call.
We all need each other. Everything balances out, I think.
I think so. Thank you for the call, Leah. It's fascinating always to talk with you. All right,
Leah.
Folks, 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Jan Tilley has written this book called Embody. I think it's fascinating. It's from the perspective. It's about an alien coming and invisibly infusing himself into a human body and learning and experiencing that. And learning from it and reporting back what he's learned and so forth. And she writes it not from the perspective of the person that it happened to, but from the perspective of the alien and what he experienced. The reason I asked the question, Jen, earlier about did you ever stop to think that what you wrote in the book may be exactly what's happening to you with this green orb coming in? The reason I ask that is because you said this book sort of just flowed through you and out onto paper. Do you think, well, out onto the word processor, I guess. But did you ever stop to really consider, I wonder, is this where I got this? Is this where it came from?
I have. I don't think it came from me. As much as my inquisitive mind questioned everything and tried to analyze what all of this would be like and the feelings and the emotions and the ulterior motive that the aliens would have in trying to understand us and trying to fit in with us and trying to figure out how to be one with us, these ideas, it was just, I hate to say it, but it's beyond me. Mm-hmm. It was beyond my little Indiana realm of thinking, and I can't take credit for it. I can't say that I'm this large of a thinker in grand scale. This information, these little tidbits, all of this concept came together and made a beautiful story with assistance. I'm the first one to admit that. There was something someone else. And I'm a morning writer. I would go to sleep frustrated, not knowing where to go, not knowing what realm to take this down. And when I would wake up in the morning, it's fresh, it's clear, it's crisp, come down to the computer and just my fingers can't keep up with my brain or my whatever it is. It's going so fast, and the thoughts and the ideas are coming through me so quickly. And it came to me while I slept. Where did that come from?
You know, Robert Louis Stevenson described a similar process. He did not describe an orb or whatever, but he would have the story just flow through him. Now, I don't know if you know, he had tuberculosis. And
I did not.
He was at the point of death and was 6 days locked in his room, wouldn't let anybody in. But 6 days later, he walked out with Treasure Island.
Really?
Yeah. And so, you know, something sort of supernatural happens with writers and musicians very frequently. It's interesting because writers and musicians you would think would be sort of like open-minded about stuff, and I've tried to get them to talk about it, and it's very difficult to get them to open up and talk about it.
It's very strange. I almost in some way just feel like a medium in some strange way that I just open up this channel to something else and things just flow right through me and come out my fingertips, and sometimes I'll read it back through and think, wow, where did that come from? Things that you don't even think consciously, and then it's easy to think, well, I'm that great of a writer. It's in my subconscious somewhere, but I'm not that naive to think that I have all of these great creative thoughts stuck in my subconscious. I do believe they're coming from somewhere else. I'm just the transport tunnel from somewhere else through my fingers onto the page. It's a beautiful thing. I'm grateful for whoever, whatever, wherever it is that that sends me all of these great ideas and information, but I don't want to sit here and take credit for it and say that I'm a wonderful creative writer, because there is something else going on there. There's something beyond me that's happening when I write.
I mentioned Dr. Gerald Epling earlier. And
yes.
His experiments have shown scientifically, with scientific measuring equipment, that plants respond to our thoughts, not just to our words. You know, if we speak to them or play music for them, we've all heard about that. They respond to our thoughts. That, to me, indicates that every bit of matter is simply a manifestation of some sort of cosmic consciousness that includes us. If a plant
can... And we're all connected.
And we're all connected. If a plant can respond to my thoughts, yeah, consciousness is real. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach. That means we only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. And if you are planning on calling in, you need to do that. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And you'll have a chance to talk with Jan Tilley. We've talked about some rather mystical and esoteric things here tonight, Jan.
Yes, we have. We've tapped into everything. You know, I wanted to say one thing, too. I have had such a great response to this book from younger people, the high schoolers, the college-age kids. They connect to this material on such a wonderful level. They can relate to it. They believe in it. They understand it. So I feel like there's hope in the next generation. The older generation are like, wow, you're kind of crazy. You're kind of out there. But the younger people really, really, really have connected to this book, which is wonderful to see how open-minded younger people are, which I guess is probably pretty normal, but they're right there. They're right in the zone, which is great.
Well, you and I are roughly the same generation, although you are younger than me. But we were roughly brought up in about the same time period. And we were essentially taught to believe that we're kangaroos. We were taught a set of things about who we are and how the earth works, how the world works. And we were taught, we were given a framework of history, and we were told, now that's it. And the fact is, most of the history we were taught is fiction, and there are records that go way back beyond what they taught us. And those records, those people wrote about even more ancient times, so... we know that there were civilizations prior to any of the written records that we've got in our possession. But it goes way, way back. And the framework that they told us, it's fiction. You and I were taught there are no other planets except in this solar system. And they taught that in science classes right up till 1995, when they discovered the first planet that they had ever discovered outside of our solar system. We now have over 1,700 that they know about. So we were brought up with all kinds of fictional constructs, and we were taught this is who you are, and that's that hand in front of our face.
Right.
This younger generation, they don't know a world without computers. You and I do. They don't. They don't know, they don't remember a world where the only planets were the ones in this solar system. So for them, a lot of the fiction was blown away just by being alive during times of discovery and development. And so it's easier for them to conceptualize. It's easier for them to interact with consciousness. We were taught in ways that kept us from interacting with consciousness.
Right. Maybe that veil will actually be lifted on the next generation to come. Hey, I wanted to ask you also, what are your thoughts on ley lines? In the book, I kind of tap into that and talk about, you know, the magnetic strips across the planet.
Mm-hmm.
That can actually transport energy sources, and the aliens, when they come down to Earth in the book and body, they actually transport. That's how they transport themselves around the planet from place to place, or on these ley lines. What are your thoughts on that?
You're right on the money. Ley lines are very real. I've got a short documentary that I did at South Mountain, which is located just south of Phoenix, Arizona. In fact, you can it is a Phoenix, Arizona municipal park, but it's just south of the city, and there are ancient petroglyphs markings out there that mark ley lines, and the largest intersection of ley lines in the United States of America is there. And these petroglyphs show exactly what you're talking about. They show beings coming from the sky, and they will be lined up with a ley line. They show beings coming up out of the earth, lined up with a ley line. And they have them marked. Now, how did these ancient people who did the petroglyphs even know about ley lines? They didn't have meters and instruments to measure them and to detect them. So how did they know? Well, we know how they knew. They saw these, what we call extraterrestrials, appearing and disappearing at these ley line intersections. And that's what they drew on those rocks. That's how we know.
That's all they are, right? Is it a magnetic force field or just an energy force field? How would an energy source get on there and actually transport?
Well, the Earth is basically a battery. It has a north pole, a south pole, so it's got a positive and a negative, and it is generating electricity. It is generating a magnetic field around it, and it is basically a gigantic battery. So it has energy running all through it, and these are ley lines. I like to think of them as sort of something similar to the veins and arteries of our body, where blood courses through there to keep us alive. Well, these ley lines are sort of like that, and the energy courses through there, keeping the Earth alive.
That's amazing. And would that be a way that extraterrestrials would actually transport around the planet?
Well, it certainly, I think, could be. Nikola Tesla knew how to tap into them and generate electricity just by driving a rod into the Earth at the right point, and could generate electricity right out of the Earth that way. Of course, you can't put a meter on the free energy, so the big energy companies have kept that suppressed.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
See, all of these ideas, they're just channeled through me into this book, which is very interesting. I've read about ley lines, but the concept of the aliens actually transporting around from place to place through this energy source when they're on the planet, they can get there quicker, they can move faster, they have their little transports is just mm-hmm. phenomenal. The ideas and the concepts are coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm trying to lift that veil, Kevin. I'm trying.
Yeah, but you don't have to try. You know, just relax, let that hand just drop entirely away from your face and say, okay, so I am at least partly from out there, so I'm just going to experience what I experience. And you'll be amazed at how much more experiences you will have. And, you know, it's only when you try to force the world into a view that's behind your hand. It just doesn't fit, and that's why we feel like misfits. And you relax, and whatever is, there's a whole lot more that is. Let me tell everybody some books if you're interested in ley lines. You need to read Sesh Harry's book called The Handprint of Atlas, and it's big, and it is really an important work on ley lines. Anything written by Walter Bosley, you need to read that, and any interviews that I have had with Jerry Wills in our archives, you need to listen to those. And any interviews that I have had with Jeff Woolline, those are in the archives. And you need to listen to those, because we talk about ley lines in those interviews. And I'll tell you something, Jan, the Jerry Wills interviews, especially about South America, absolutely phenomenal. Jan, stay on the line with me. We're out of time. Ladies and gentlemen, I wish we had more time. It's been a lot of fun, hasn't it? Jan Tilley, the book is called Embody. Be sure you go over to Amazon.com and grab yourself a copy of this, okay? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.